this and safe travels wherever you went this year. We are finally getting over from our feast and post-feast illnesses. Jackie came down with it Sunday night during the feast, the very second day of the feast, and she was sick as a dog all week. Friday morning after I gave a sermon on Thursday in Tahoe, we decided we needed to get her home to get some treatment or care or something like this. So we packed up the car. I packed the entire car, and then we drove for about 7-8 hours, and then we spent the night and drove another 7-8 hours. I unpacked the car when we got back home and got her back in bed and things. And I had to go grocery shopping Sunday morning because we were completely out of everything. Sunday night, right before we were getting ready to have dinner, I got sick as a dog. And I've been that way for 3 weeks. I didn't eat anything for the first week, coughed, sore throat, congestion. It was just a long haul. But we're glad we're back. Thank you for your prayers. Thank you for your concern, your cards, and everything else. Hopefully no relapses. Many times in the past, we have reviewed some of the miracles that Christ performed during his ministry here on earth. During many of these miracles and healings, there was another group of individuals that were constantly judging his actions and his motives. Let's begin today by turning to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. These other individuals had it in their minds that they were right about everything and that Jesus Christ was nothing more than a troublemaker and non-respectful to them. Here in Luke 6, we will see a couple of those examples where the Pharisees and the scribes were being very judgmental of Jesus Christ. We'll also take a peek at one of the comments that Christ made from the Sermon on the Mount a little bit later on. As we've seen in the past, the Sermon on the Mount messages by Jesus Christ was an all-encompassing discussion about the many aspects of Christian living and Christian life. Let's first look here in Luke 6 and see one of these judgmental confrontations between Jesus and the Pharisees. Let's pick it up in Luke 6 and verse 1. Luke 6, verse 1. Now it happened on the second Sabbath after the first that he went through the grain fields, and his disciples plucked the heads of grain and ate them, rubbing them in their hands. Seemed like a very common thing to do. And some of the Pharisees said to them, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" Interesting question. Not lawful, I might add, by their own man-made additions to the Sabbath that they wanted everybody else to follow, even if they didn't. They were just waiting for his next move so that they could complain about it and criticize what he was doing. It was like laying in wait to just pounce on him. This is one of the keys to being judgmental. Always on the lookout for someone else to make a mistake or do something or say something that we don't agree with. It's like we can't wait for them to make another mistake, at least by our standards, so we can then criticize. We've got an excuse. Let's continue in verse 3. But Jesus answering them said, "Have you not even read this, that David did, what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he went into the house of God, took and ate the showbread, and also gave some to those with him, which is not lawful for any but the priests to eat?" He said, are you not aware of that ever taking place? And he said to them, "The Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." This is a very powerful statement because this is telling them and us there's one Lord of the Sabbath, and that's Jesus Christ, and he is in control of that. He calls the shots, he calls the disciplines, he calls the avenues to take, he calls what's right, what's wrong, how to do it, how not to do it, and how to do it the proper way. He was sort of in their face about their quote-unquote understanding of the Sabbath when he made this comment. Next, we'll have another episode where the scribes now get involved, along with the Pharisees, and they were just waiting for Jesus Christ to do something else that they could pounce on. Let's continue in verse 6. Now it happened on another Sabbath day also that he entered the synagogue and taught, and a man was there whose right hand was withered. So the scribes and Pharisees watched him closely, probably staring at him, whether he would heal on the Sabbath that they might find an accusation against him. Again, they're laying in wait, just hoping, almost praying that Jesus Christ will do something that they can criticize. It's an awful, awful attitude. That's the judgmental attitude that I just mentioned a bit ago. It is an attitude, brethren, that we all need to be aware of. They just couldn't wait for another opportunity to criticize. And far too many people have carried this attitude around for years, if they would be honest with themselves. What a sad mentality to live with, if you stop and think about it. Verse 8, Luke 6. But he knew their thoughts. Christ knew what was going on inside them. And said to the man who had the withered hand, arise and stand right here. And he arose and stood. Jesus Christ is now going to make an example. Again, he was in their faces, knowing what they were thinking and knowing what they were planning. So Jesus does exactly that, giving them an opportunity. And they were just standing there waiting to criticize. They couldn't wait for the first words to come out of their mouth. Verse 9, then Jesus said to them, not to him, not the withered hand guy standing in his midst, to the Pharisees and scribes, I will ask you one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy? I'm just asking you this one quick question here, folks. Think about it for a second. Let me repeat that. I will ask you just one thing. Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil, to save life or to destroy? And when he had looked around at all of them, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And he did so. And his hand was restored as whole as the other. A miracle. Instantaneous miracle. In your face to the Pharisees and scribes. They haven't even answered the question that he asked them. And how did that work out? They went nuts. Read it. Verse 11. But they were filled with rage. And discussed one another what they might do to Jesus. Now they wanted to cause bodily harm. They wanted to shut this guy up, this troublemaker, this antagonist. This is also an interesting aspect of being judgmental. People seem to get enraged with those who are being judgmental toward them. Think about it. Sort of like what we've been living through for the last several years and even still today in this country and elsewhere. They have to make someone else wrong so that they can be right. Again, what a sad and warped mentality to be working with. Something for all of us to be aware of. These are only two of several examples about how judgmental the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes were toward Jesus Christ. It was continuous. It was like a nonstop rampage. And the more antagonistic he got with them, the more enraged they became with him. They wanted to kill him. They just wanted to destroy him. It's interesting on the heels of these two episodes that Christ delivered what appears to be a part of the Sermon on the Mount and made a very interesting statement. After all this dialogue's going on, the Pharisees and Sadducees, and they're enraged now, they're angry with him. Excuse me. Drop down to verse 37 of Luke 6. This is an interesting statement, especially given how he had just been treated by some of the Jewish leadership. These are some pretty condemning words that Christ is sharing with them at this statement here. Verse 37 of Luke 6. Judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. This is a mouthful, especially for these leaders here. And then he goes on, he says, give and it will be given to you. In other words, turn your whole attitude around. Become giving, loving, caring, sharing. Give, it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. This should send a shock to our spinal system. Because Jesus Christ is saying, you know what? You got to be careful about how you live your life. You got to be careful about what you say to people, about people. You got to be careful of how you handle yourselves in different situations. Because whatever way you, me, us, try to live our lives, however that's going to be measured out by us, Jesus Christ said, guess what? You're going to get the exact same thing in return. Good, bad, or indifferent. This is one of the many places in the Bible where we are told that how we treat and deal with others is how God will treat and deal with us. Again, this should be like an unnerving awareness for us. We, by our behavior, set the standard for God to follow. Think about that. We, by our behavior, set the standard for him to follow. Not unlike Christ, Paul had to stand up to those being judgmental toward him as well. And we've read many of these things too. So now flip over to 1 Corinthians 6. 1 Corinthians 6. Thank you for the water today. While we are turning to 1 Corinthians 6, let me share an interesting ditty that is so indicative of many of our lives. Sometimes our being judgmental might be like the woman who was bitten by a rabid dog, and it looked like she was going to die from rabies. The doctor told her to put her final affairs in order. So the woman took pen and paper and began writing furiously. In fact, she wrote and wrote and wrote some more. Finally, the doctor said, "That sure is a long will you're making." She snorted, "Will nothing. I'm making a list of all the people I'm going to bite." We as human beings seem to always want our revenge, our pound of flesh when we've been mistreated. Yes, Paul suffered from others being judgmental of him too. But he also had another perspective regarding judging. Let's pick it up here. Some people probably use this scripture, like we are going to look at the next here in 1 Corinthians 6, as their excuse or rationale for being judgmental. You'll see what I'm talking about here in a moment. Let's pick it up in 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 1. 1 Corinthians 6, verse 1. "Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unrighteous and not before the saints?" He's talking to the congregation here, the members of the church in Corinth. "Do you not know," verse 2, "that the saints will judge the world? And if the world will be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge in the smallest matters? Is there something going on between two of you? Can't you just work it out? Instead of taking it to court somewhere, to the unrighteous? Do you not know that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life?" This is a pretty indicting comment coming from Paul about being judgmental about things. Yes, there is coming a time that we will be given the responsibility to be judges over all of mankind. You might want to add a quote in your notes from Revelation 20 and verse 4. I'm not going to turn there. Revelation 20 and verse 4, which supports what we just read in 1 Corinthians 6 about becoming judges in the millennium under the rule of Jesus Christ. That's coming. And Christ is trying to show us, and Paul's trying to show us, we need to be prepared for that time when it arrives. And maybe even apply it to things that are taking place in our general life today. There is, however, an important difference between being a judge and being judgmental. The definition of being judgmental includes this: making or tending to make judgments as to value, importance, etc., often specifically judgments considered to be lacking in tolerance, compassion, objectivity, characterized by the tendency to judge harshly. That's what being judgmental falls into. And sometimes, brethren, we too can be judgmental, which is one of those hidden sins that may escape us from time to time. To judge, on the other hand, means this: to form an opinion about something through careful weighing of evidence and the testing of premises to get the facts and make an objective decision. Two completely different approaches to life. Obviously, this would be when it's one's responsibility to judge. And sometimes we have to judge among ourselves at times. Let's now turn over to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. A little too far. This chapter of Matthew 7 is right in the middle of the actual Sermon on the Mount. In it, Matthew recorded a much more detailed discussion on being judgmental than we saw in Luke, and some of the dangers that are part of this type of behavior. These are lessons and points that we've discussed and heard in many messages over the years, and I feel it's important to review them every once in a while. As the saying goes, if the shoe fits. As the German-Dutch author Thomas von Kempen wrote, in the judging of others, a man labors in vain, often errs and easily sins. But in judging and examining himself, he always labors fruitfully. It's a value, something to keep in mind. Let's look at Matthew 7 and see what Jesus Christ had to say about this subject. We're going to begin reading in Matthew 7 and verse 1. Straightforward, right off the bat here. Judge not that you not be judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Again, this is saying, you know, be careful how you live. Be careful about what you say to and about each other. And be careful about the attitude in which this is all being generated. He goes on in verse 3, he said, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but not consider the plank in your own eye? Sort of an extreme analogy there, but it makes the point. Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, the plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite! First, remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Totally different approach to life. And that statement by Jesus Christ was understood by others throughout history. One Roman playwright, simply known as Terence, who lived around 175 to 145 BC, was quoted in one of his plays as saying this: human nature is so constituted that all see and judge better in the affairs of other men than in their own. No truer statement was ever made, and something that we need to be aware of. In other words, they were good at being busybodies. And folks, there has been far, far, far too much of this over the years in the Church of God. Busybodies. Nibbing our noses where it doesn't belong. Trying to find out something about somebody else so we can discuss it with somebody else yet. Let's now turn over to Romans 14. Romans chapter 14. Have you ever noticed how judgmental individuals tend to make others feel uncomfortable? Since those who are being judgmental are looking to criticize in addition to judging. We need to ask ourselves, do we like being watched by others? Being watched to potentially be criticized? You know, just waiting for the next criticism to come flying in from somewhere and never knowing when it'll come next. Doesn't feel very good, does it? If we've been the recipient or the giver of that sort of behavior. A judgmental person gives another person the feeling of being judged virtually all the time. And that is unbelievably sad. And unbelievably wrong. When we're judgmental at church, we too often make others feel uncomfortable and uneasy, and definitely unloved. Nobody wants that. And in doing so, we can make ourselves very unpleasant to be around. Paul addresses this subject rather pointedly here in Romans 14. It's actually begin Romans 14 in verse 4. Paul writes, "Who are you to judge another's servant? To his own master he stands or falls. Indeed, he will be made to stand, for God is able to make him stand." Drop down to verse 10. Paul continues this thought. Romans 14, verse 10. "But why do you judge your brother? Or why do you show contempt for your brother? For we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ." We're putting ourselves in a very, very bad position when we do this. Then Paul quotes from Isaiah 45 here in verse 11. "For it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me and every tongue shall confess to God. So then each of us shall give account of himself to God. Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore. But rather resolve this, not to put a stumbling block or cause to fall in our own brother's way." If you think about it, this is yet another form of causing division, which we know God and Jesus Christ absolutely hate. Paul just told us to not do anything that would become a stumbling block or troublesome to another member. Anything. Let's now turn to James 1. James chapter 1. In here somewhere, there it is. It also seems like, at least in my observations, that those who are more judgmental of others, when something like that happens to them, they're the first ones to demand an apology. And they also seem to hold grudges, which we heard a message about earlier this year. To conquer this ugly trait, we must first all come to the knowledge that we are being or have been judgmental. I will say it again, that it is not unlike gossiping. We've done it for so long, it just comes natural to us and we think nothing of it. It's also interesting that those who are judgmental sometimes find themselves on the wrong end of their judgments. As we turn to James 1, let me share a little story with you. Not sure if it's true, but you'd sure like it to be. Late one summer evening in Broken Bow, Nebraska, a very weary truck driver pulled his rig into an all-night truck stop. The waitress had just served him when three tough-looking, leather-jacketed motorcyclists, all of Hell's Angels type, decided to give him a hard time. Not only did they verbally abuse him, one grabbed the burger off his plate, another took a handful of his French fries, and the third one picked up his coffee and began to drink it. How would you respond? Well, the trucker did not respond as one might expect. Instead, he calmly rose, picked up his check, walked to the front of the room, put the check and his money on the cash register, and went out the door. The waitress followed him to put the money in the till and stood watching out the door as the big truck drove away into the night. When she returned, one of the bikers said to her, "Well, he's not much of a man, is he?" She replied, "I don't know about that, but he sure ain't much of a truck driver. He just ran over 3 motorcycles way out in the parking lot." You talk about being wrong in your judgment of someone else. Let's look at what James says here in James 1. We'll pick it up in James 1 and verse 19. Again, to correct this type of judgmental behavior, we have to first admit that we are doing it ourselves. James 1, verse 19. "So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. For the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is also able to save your souls. But be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of a man he really is. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one will be blessed in what he does." I don't know how many times we read that passage of Scripture, and every time I read it, I think to myself, I really do need to pay attention to that. We are urged throughout the Bible to grow into the perfect example of Jesus Christ as our older brother. We have all heard that in many messages, yet none of us matches up to this measurement yet. Turn back to Philippians 1 next. Philippians chapter 1. Philippians 1. We all have our faults. God and Jesus Christ know that. They just don't want us to stay in those faults. And how we measure our own faults is always an interesting effort in human nature. As we turn to Philippians 1, let me share another cute story that makes a good point on evaluating ourselves. There was once a little boy who excitedly told his mom that he had just measured himself and he was 6 feet tall. Mom was a little skeptical, so she asked him to measure himself again and while she watched. She discovered the problem when the boy took out not a 12-inch, but a 6-inch ruler. He had calculated well. He was 6 ruler heights tall. He just had the wrong ruler, the wrong standard to be measured by. We often fall into the same problem ourselves. We often judge ourselves by a very different standard than even the one we judge others by. We need to, as James showed us, turn the mirror in our own direction and take a really good look. This righteousness we are seeking is a goal that is only accomplished through God's Spirit working effectively in us. Jesus Christ is our righteousness, and he's our help and our strength. By working in and through us, he will help us prevail. Let's begin here in Philippians 1 and verse 8. Philippians 1 verse 8. "For God is my witness how greatly I long for you all with the affection of Jesus Christ. And this I pray, that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and all discernment, that you may approve the things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness which are by Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God." That's a mouthful. We all stand or fall before our God and his Son, Jesus Christ, with whom we must give account. Overcoming being judgmental is hard because many of us have been doing it for so long and it's just a part of our being. Hopefully, we have seen today that acting and behaving like this, for the most part, brings undesirable results for us. And more importantly, others who we are to be loving toward. We must recognize that it is correct to judge ourselves, but we're not to judge others. That is up to their master, Jesus Christ, as we were reminded in Romans 14. As we get ready to close, let's go to Galatians 6. Galatians 6. Too far. We need to recognize right from wrong, good from evil, righteousness from iniquity, but not scrutinize others by trying to find faults in them. When we see a fault in others, we should seek to help them instead of judging them. Here in Galatians 6 gives the charge to the Galatians that those who are spiritual are to help to restore with a fault and help that person work through it. Being judgmental only pushes others away and establishes self-righteousness in the judge who's doing the judging. So again, in Galatians 6 and verse 1, Paul writes, he said, "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourselves, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." This is how we need to be looking out for each other. Not condemning, but encouraging and loving in gentleness. Verse 3, "For if anyone thinks of himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another." And folks, that's what all of these messages are aimed at, focusing on us and what we may need to change in our lives. Verse 5, "For each one shall bear his own load. Let him who is taught the word share it on all good things with him who teaches." Then Paul summarizes this message with this powerful statement about all that we do in our lives. Verse 7, he says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For if he sows to the flesh, will of the flesh reap corruption? But if he sows to the Spirit, will of the Spirit reap everlasting life?" It's all about our focus, and that stems from the way we think. Verse 9, "And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." Brethren, the Church of God will have a warmer, a more welcoming atmosphere and be more godly body if we learn to conquer this ugly, ugly trait of being judgmental. If we all spent more time focusing on loving one another, we would have a little time left to be judgmental. The next time we feel the need to judge someone, let it be ourselves. Just like Jesus Christ said in Matthew 7, "Judge not, that you be not judged." Brethren, may God help us root out this congregational life killer, the horrible tendency of being judgmental. Have a good Sabbath.